We're going to learn a piece in the Chazon Ish on the words of Rav. Rav says on Kuf Ches Amid Aleph regarding the Tipas Cholov, Kevan Shen Nosan Tam B'Chaticha, Chaticha Atzma Nases Nebel. And then Rav goes on and he says, Veoseris is called Chatichus Kulim Mipnei Shein Mino. Rav holds Min Ben Mino is also B'Mashah Afil Belfo, but like Rav Yehuda, fine. Now, first of all, this Gemara of Rav appears also on Daf Kuf Amid Aleph. Let's take a quick look on Daf Kuf Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says that Uki Rav Amora Levit Darash Kevan Shen Nosan Tam B'Chaticha Chaticha Atzma Nases Nevela Moseres Kol Chatichus Kul Neshein Mino. So some of the Achronim, even the Meiri and the Mishonim are bothered by the fact that he repeats it. So the Meiri says that Rav here in our context wants to add that when the Basar has a Bli of Cholov in it, it has a Shame Basar. So in other words, even though the Oser is the Cholov, but the Shame Isur is identified with the Basar. You might have said, well, since the Cholov is the Oser, it fell into the Basar, then maybe there's a Shem Cholov, which would mean that when it falls into other Chatichos, it would be Min B'She'eno Mino. So Rav here wants to emphasize, no, it has a Shem Basar and it's Min Ben Mino. Now that Meiri, I think, is a good introduction to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish wants to ask the following question. What would be a case of a tipas cholov shenofla la chaticha, but then that chaticha fell into a yorishal cholov? Now, Rav's focus here is on the top piece of meat falling into, in the container, the other pieces of meat, and that sets up min b'mino. So the Chazon Ish is asking, why couldn't the Mishnah and Rav address a different scenario where that piece of meat fell into Yorishal Cholov? And the reason why the Chazon Ish is bothered by this is because if the Tipas Cholov is the Oser on the first round, then it becomes min b'mino with the Yorishal Cholov. And Rav could have established the same exact halacha of min b'mino lo batel in this scenario. Is it just coincidental that he mentions the hechetimtza of basa b'basa? Why can't it be cholov b'cholov? That would also be min b'mino. Now, I'm not sure if this diuk is a diuk, but let's assume we're on board. We accept this diuk. It's a really good question. There could be a min b'mino here in a yorishal cholov. So what conclusion should I draw from the fact that this is not the scenario that Rav addresses? What would you say?
Osir is the basar, not the...
Right, it seems that the shame here is the shame basar, not the shame chalav. If we go back to the Meiri, the Meiri wanted to suggest that what Rav is being mechadish here in our sugi is that even though the chalav was the osir, nevertheless the shame basar is chal with regard to this mixture of basar and chalav, such that now when it falls into other chatichos, it's oser b'min b'mino, because the shame basar. Now, I'm not sure if the Chazon Ish is aware of this Meiri, but it could be that the Chazon Ish wants to derive a conclusion, halacha l'maisa, from this Meiri, meaning if the mixture of basar b'chalav, in the case of tipas chalav shenafal chatich, is called the shame basar, then when that basar falls into a kedera of a yorish al chalav, it's min b'sheinu, because it has a shame basar and not a shame chalav. But the question still remains: why does it have a shame basar? Now you could say because the basar is the rov; it doesn't have shishim, because otherwise the whole chatich would be muteres and the chalav would be batel. But nevertheless, it has rov. So maybe the shame basar that the Meiri points out is the yisoda yisodas that underlies Rav's halachic statement here. That shame basar is a result of the fact that the chalav is the miut that's penetrating into the rov of basar, and it creates an iser basar chalav in the basar. Now, if that be the case, then what would be if a chatichas basar, let's call it a tipas basar, if you could imagine, a small amount of basar would fall into a yorish shel chalav, then it could be in that case where the rov is the chalav, that the shame would be a shame chalav. So now if that mixture falls into other chatichos, it would be min b'she'eno mino, but if it falls into a yorish shel chalav, it might be min b'mino. So that's a very fascinating question here. When does basar chalav generate a shame basar, and are there situations in which fakir it generates a shame chalav, and then afkamin is both, it's going to be min bimino when it falls into another kendera. Now there's a thought that crossed my mind. You'll recall that on Kuf Ches, after the Gemara quotes the memra of Rav, the Gemara raises a possibility of Gidi. Let me see if I can find that. Just one second. Let's see, where is that? You remember that?
I just check. I see where the quotation from that passage.
Oh, gifti below chalav, right? The Gemara is going to reject that, but let's just think about the hava meaning here. This is on Kuf Amid Aleph?
No,
on Amid Beis.
The top of
them in bins. Leol Kosova Rav. Efshel Soto Osur. Beshaini Hossam. The Omer Krolos Vashel Gdiba Chalev Imo. Gdi Osur Tor Velo Chalov. So I'm just going to suggest the possibility here that even though the Gemara rejects this, because there's another statement of Rav that if you mix a chatzi zayis basar with chatzi zayis chalav, you're chayav for that if you eat it, right? So you see that you're chayav even for the chalav. It's not just gedi, but it could be that there's still something that we do want to derive from this gedi asra tov v'lo chalav, and that would be that the shame after the chalav and the meat mixed together, there's the sinas tam, the shame is a shame gdi. The Torah classifies it as basar. And what am I trying to point out here? That maybe it has nothing to do with rov. We suggested that the shame basar was because it was rov basar, but lo yitzur there would have been rov chalav, maybe you'd have shame chalav, but maybe it's not so. The Torah looks at this mixture of a tam, chalav, and basar and calls it basar. It's called gdi. That's what the Torah is prohibiting. The gdi that received the tam of the chalav. So again, it could go in two ways. It could be the gdi receives the tam of the chalav because there's enough of the tipas chalav. Let's call it 59. Or the other way around. It could be the gdi is a small amount that fell into a large yorah of chalav. It still is the gdi. And this mixture has a shame basar in it. Now, the second paragraph or the sefer here of this Chazon Ish is beyond my comprehension. I read it a few times. Let me read it one more time. Umiha deloka amar de tipas chalav shel basar v'chalav oseres kol hachatichos. So again, what I think he's talking about is basar that fell into a yoreh shel chalav. And now you have basar v'chalav, and the chalav itself now is called basar v'chalav. So if one of the drops of milk in that first bishul falls into the other chatichos, then would that be min b'mino? Again, if we're assuming, like the Meiri, that basar v'chalav has a shame basar to it, so maybe if a tipas chalav of this basar v'chalav falls into a yorish al chalav, maybe it's going to be considered min b'sheino mino, because again, the osir here is the basar. So now we have a question, and it's why did the Gemara insist that the chaticha fell into chatichos, even if the tipas chalav would fall into the chatichos? That also would be considered min bimino because it's a min basar, despite the fact that in physics and chemistry we have chalav falling into chalav, but it's called al pidin basar. Now I'm not sure at what point he starts answering this question. He says, "Mishum," is this part of his question or is this his answer? "Mishum shetam basar shebesocha havi min bimino im habasar." So I think what he's saying is that if you focus your attention and investigate this tipas cholav, what you'll find is that it's basar. Why is it basar? Because the whole reason that this tipas cholav is basar v'cholav is because of the tam basar and the cholav. Mashma dafilu tam gomor balua lo mikri min bimino lesar. In other words, even though the chalav is saturated with a tam isur, so the chalav has a blia of basar inside of it.
Nevertheless,
min bimino, lo mikri min bimino, sorry, it's not considered min bimino. In other words, when we have the case of Rav, that the basar has a tam chalav in it, then we said that the basar generates an isur of min bimino with other chatichos of basar. Why not apply the reverse rule that chalav that has a tam basar should be considered in the rest of the chalav if it falls into a yorish al chalav min bimino? It's chalav b'chalav. And the answer is that it only goes in one direction. It's true that when the chalav falls into basar, the basar retains the shame basar and generates an isur of min bimino with other chatichos. But when the chalav is now saturated with the tam of basar, we're not going to give it a tam, we're not going to give it a shame chalav, such that it, if it falls into yosh al chalav, it's going to asur bimin bimino, but rather we're going to assume that even in that scenario, it's considered basar. Mashma dafilu tam gomur balua meaning that even though there's a tam gomer of basar that's polu in the chalav, nevertheless lo mikrimin bimino, when this chalav falls into yoshal chalav, it's not considered bimino. Why? Because it retains the shame basar. The pella here is that Rav Kiveger doesn't, or I mean the Chazon Ish doesn't explain why this should be. It's like a gzeres hakosef. He presents a, again, a diuk is a diuk if you want to accept that diuk. Why are we talking about a case of chatichas basa with other chatichas of basa? Why not talk about chalav with other chalav? And again, draw the same conclusion of in bimina, once the chalav receives the tam of basa. So that diuk is an excellent diuk. The Gemara should have pointed out, Rav should have gone in two directions, basar and basar, or chalav and chalav, but he didn't do so, and he deliberately omitted that because the chalav, once it becomes asur, becomes asur b'toras gedi, b'toras basar. You know, I only wish he would have given me a little bit more, if he would have fleshed it out a little bit more. Alright, let's go on. Now this next section, which I got up to the Ran, which is the third paragraph on the next page. You don't have that, no. But you do have Michli.
I have Michli.
This is very important. And he says the following. Rav made two points. The first point that Rav made was Chatikhanasis Nevela. The second point was Min Bimina Lo Bata. What is the relationship between those two points? Harishonim Nechleku Ha'im, and this is the first possibility, Chidusho Shel Rav Deika Din Chatichas Navela Nemar Rak the Min Bimina Lo Bata, meaning the Seifa really is the background and the, shall I say, the base for the ratio of Chatichas Navela. If you don't have Min Bimina Lo Bata, according to this possibility, then you don't have Chatichanas Nevela. And then Afkamina is going to be the Shitas Chachamim that we saw here on Kuf Chesam and Beis, that Mim Bimina is Bata. According to the Chachamim, we will not apply the principle of Hanan. Why? Because Hanan is a result of Mim Bimina Lo Bata. And this is the Shita of the Ravid, the Ravan, the Machria, the Eshkol. Now a whole bunch of Rishonim. We'll call it the Ravid Shita. He's the Rosh HaKabura. Umekoro mehadlo huska din chanan rak b'min b'minol Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, we don't have any Gemara that mentions Chatichanas Nevela other than this one of Rav. And Rav is talking about min b'minol. So the Chaticha El Yona, which became prohibited because the Tipus Chov now fell into other Chatichos, and it was Min Bimino, and we apply Rav Yehuda's principle, which Rav accepts, namely Min Bimino Lo Batal, hence Chaticha Nasis Nevela. But again, this is not a logical conclusion, it's sort of contextual, meaning in what context does the Gemara, does Rav formulate the principle of Chaticha Nasis Nevela in the context of Min Bimino? He's telling you that the Chaticha now is Asura Bifnei Atzma, it's the Isur is Chal in the Basar, and now it's going to generate an Isur and another Basar because of Min Bimino. But logically, there's no reason why the Chachamim, who reject the principle of Min Bimino of Rabbi Yehuda, why they couldn't accept the principle of Chaticha Nasis Nevela. So that leads into the second possibility, O Dilma, Din Chaticha Nasis Nevela Nemar Gamla Shitas Chachamim, Disvilu Min Bimino Bata. And that's the final conclusion of the Ramban and the Ran. And they quote a Yushalmi to prove this. And he says there's a very logical proof from the fact that all the Rishonim who paskin like Rabbanon that Min Bimino is bought to the Rambam and others, paskin like Rav, that there's a din of Chatichanas Nevela, which logically makes so sense. I mean, why should Rabbanon be excluded from Chatichanas Nevela? Because the whole chiddush of Basar v'Chalav is that you take Heter and Heter, you combine it together, and you create this new entity which is called Basar v'Chalav. Well, that new entity is a Chatichanas Nevela. And that has nothing to do with the Chachamim and Min Bimino Bata. So on the next page, let's maybe we'll read it together.
Before you do that,
yeah.
I'm just looking at the Gemara before the Mishnah. Isn't the Gemara considering whether Efter Soto is Mutar Asa, whether that is the context of discussion or not? Isn't that what's going on here? Hi, Ma'i. I'm Rabbi Shmuel Ben Zminum Hacha Kirabi Huda Fzirale, and the Gemara is going to say, and then that we understand what we said. But if you don't say that, then right, then that's possible, right? Isn't that what's going on here?
And what? And that has nothing to do with Midbenito.
No, the Gemara raised the possibility that maybe the issue is whether Midbenito Batel, Midbenito Lo Batel. As a possible
explanation of Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanu,
and they rejected it because of the
Right, there could be that even the Chacham agreed that Min B'Mino Lo Bato.
Yeah. So doesn't.
So if you identify, let's say, Efshel Soto Aser with Hanan, then the Gemara seems to be vacillating back and forth whether Min B'Mino is Bato or Lo Bato. It doesn't seem that the Gemara went out of its way to point out that Hanan is predicated on Min B'Mino Lo Bato, although Rav does connect the two. So I guess these Rishonim are focused on Rav. But what interests me is what's the conceptual connection here? Why should there be any relationship between the Machlokes of Min B'Mino and the issue of Hanan?
Right.
So I wanted to show you this paragraph inside, and he says the following. He says, Ramban Pirish, Dilaman Diyom Min B'Mino Lo Batel, Ein HaHeter Roi Levatel Es HaIsur.
Min B'Mino Lo Batel.
Right? This is very interesting. Right? What he's saying is that when you mix the Cholov with the Basar, then you want to identify Heter, which could be Mavatel Iser. At least it has to be Roy Mavatel Iser, right? I would underline this word Roy. I mean, it might not have enough to be Mavatel, but at least it has the capacity to be Mavatel. So you need a Heter, which could be Mavatel Iser. And based on the fact that Heter could possibly be Mavatel Iser, then you're going to decide whether Chaticha Nas is Nevel or not. Good morning, Khan. Lamadi or Min B'Mino Lo Batel. If I look at the relationship between the Heter of the original piece of Basar and the other pieces of Basar, what I have is something which is a Heter that's not Roy Levatel Sa'isur.
Because
Min B'Mino Lo Batel. In other words, there's no way that the heter of Basar could be Mavatel other pieces, could be Batel in other pieces of Basar, because it's always going to be Min B'Mino. And if the heter is not Roy for Bittel, then we apply the principle of Chaticha Nas Nevela. In other words, we're changing the nature of the heter, because this heter reaches that high status of a heter that's not Roy Levatel Sa'isur. And why can't this heter be mevatel iser? It's because min b'mino lo batel. Aval b'lamad yom min b'mino batel, kevin sheheter roy levatel iser. So if this chaticha, which would be, let's say, nevela, would be mevatel the iser, or the iser be mevatel the nevela, or the iser, I guess it's more of a duty to say the iser mevatel the boss of heter. In other words, the relationship between one boss and the other is a relationship of bittel, again, if we had shishim. So that itself gives the heter a status, a permanent status as heter. And therefore, ein nas is the bit. And he says that this appears in the other Rishonim, you'll see it in the Eshkol, in the Machria, the Ran. And then he says that, however, the Ramban writes that this logic only applies to Shari Surim, but it doesn't apply to Basar B'Cholov. That this is the Ramban's objection against the Raivah. He says that in the case of Basa B'chalav, you could talk about whether the heter is royal of Atalas Isur or not royal of Atalas Isur, and you could say it's not royal of Atalas Isur because that's the nature of Basa B'chalav. Hasiba shenasis nevela he mishum shezel mahuso shal Isur Basa B'chalav shekolecha nasi lechefta v'isura. But the Ravid extends this logic even to Shari Surim to differentiate between Min Bemino Batal and Min Bemino Sheino Batal, and that doesn't make any sense. And Haran Pirish, Tachaticha Shekibla Tam Isur, Eino Mispatelis Bemino, Viafshe Klape Blia Sa Isur Mikri Min Bemisheino Min Bemikomakom, Kevin Shablia Osra Sachaticha, Kibela Isra Shema Min Shel Achaticha, Al Kain Mikri Min Bemino, Avo Bisheino Mino, Lo Shayach Tam Ze. So the Rambam wants to say that the whole Yisod of Chaticha Nasis Nevela is because that Chaticha received a Blia of Cholov, which makes it into a Chaticha Surah. And what makes this chaticha into a chaticha sura? It's the fact that it has the same shame min as the chatichos that's going to fall into because we're holding now min v'mino ein v'batla. But kids, the bottom line of this whole discussion is that there's a school of thought headed up by the Ravid that chaticha nas nevela only applies according to the Bnei Yomar min v'mino lo v'batla. I mean, that's pretty way out. And this is a whole sheet of the Rishon. So I think it's time to start the next Mishnah. So we're looking on Daf Kuftes Amud Aleph at the bottom of the Amud, and the name of this Mishnah is Chal. What is Chal?
It brings back so many memories.
No.
Is that a hey idea?
Right, hey Yidiyah.
Okay.
So what is Chal? Chal is an udder, as we say in English. In Hebrew it's called a dad. And it's full of milk, because that's where the milk is stored, in the Chal.
Mm-hmm.
And the milk is stored in Basa, meaning the Chal itself is Basa. So you have now a situation where you have a serious volume of cholov in basar. So what you really want to do is you want to figure out how to get rid of the cholov and separate it from the chal, because you want to eat the chal.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a delicacy. And this whole discussion applies after Shechita. I mean, how do you get the chal and you want to eat the chal? You must have shechted the animal. So after you slaughtered the animal, you find the chal that's full, saturated with cholov. So the Mishnah says, ha-chal kor'o, he has to take a knife and slice it. U-motzi es-chelvo, and he has to remove the milk. Because if he takes this chal and he cooks it in a pot, he's going to make it into basa b'chalav. Now, what would you say if he didn't do this? You know, it's very nice that you gave me this recommendation of kriya, not to be identified with Hilchos Aveilus, but kriya to cut open the chal and drain it, so to speak, of all its milk. So what would you say if he didn't do so and he cooked it as is in its natural form?
Aren't there certain halachot that if you leave something in its place, it's less of a problem? I don't know if it's about a certain impact.
That's in Dam. In Dam, it has to do with Dam Shapirish, Dam Shalom Pirish. But in any event, I was expecting an answer to my question. I'm asking, because pedagogically,
no, I didn't know if they
pedagogically, if you give me an answer to my question, then I'll be able to explain the Mishnah. So that, again, what would be in your knee-jerk response, intuitive? If you did not cut the chal, and the chal is basa that's saturated with chol, and you cooked it as is, what would be your natural inclination? Correct. It would be an isa doraisa bishul, and for sure, if you ate this combination, you would be. So the Mishnah tells you not that way. And the Mishnah says, lo kra'o, if he cooks it as is without cutting and draining the chalav, eino over olav. Now those three words, eino over olav, are going to generate a whole sugya that we're going to learn today. Hashem, what does that mean, eino over olav? He doesn't violate if he cooks it as is, or he eats it after he cooks it. What does that mean? Does that mean on the deraisa level, or it means even midrabanan, you're okay? I don't know. If you say even midrabanan, it's okay, then there's just a almost like a marasayin aloch here that requires kriya, but there's no real reason why you need kriya, and technically you could cook it as is. But the question we want to ask here is, what happened to the isur basar b'chalav here? Why is chal excluded from basar b'chalav?
Is it significant that it says to tear instead of to cut?
You mean the difference between kriya and chituch, let's say?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any difference.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it will come up later, unless you know something that I don't know.
No, it's just that normally when I think of meat, I don't try to tear it. I cut it.
Right.
Okay.
Well, actually, kriya in general, I think, is with a knife, usually.
Oh, okay.
Usually, I mean. So now I want to tell you something from a sugya later on at the end of this parak. The pasuk says, Lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo. And the Gemara darshins that b'chalev imo means re'uya lios aim. So again, keep in mind that when you extract the milk from, let's say, a behemoth, from a para, that para may or may not be the mother of a calf, right?
Mm.
But the Torah went out of its way to call the cow, or the milk that's extracted from the cow, imo. It's the milk that extracted from imo. So the Gemara darshins, she's got to be at least re'uya lios aim, that she could be a mother. She could give birth to a calf, meaning the potential is there. This, the Gemara says, comes to exclude a dead cow. Meaning if you shechted the cow and you extract the milk from the carcass of the cow, that's not called milk. This is fascinating because on a biological level, I'm absolutely certain that it has the same chemical compounds as milk. You know, you put it in a lamb, you would not know whether this chalav was taken out of a live animal or a dead animal. But chalav is a halachic category. It's an abstract legal category. What you might say is biologic chalav doesn't make it chalav in halachic terms, right? So for example, we're going to learn later about chalav, a non-kosher animal. That's not called chalav. So there may be many different conditions that the halacha imposes on chalav. And one of them is chalav imo. And why did the Torah say chalav imo? Because it's coming to exclude the chalav that's removed from a shechuta. That once the animal is shechted, and now the animal obviously is no longer re'uya lios aim, therefore that chalav is not called chalav imo. And hence it's not included in the iser of basar b'chalav. Now, the Gemara is going to say later on that to some extent the Chachamim are going to be machmir on a Drabbanah level, and they're going to give a din chalav to chalav shchuta. Now, in the case of chalav that's found in a chal, that's a little bit different than chalav shchuta, because the chalav of a chal is muvla bibasar hakchal. In other words, it never really established itself as chalav. In the case of chalav shchuta, what we find is chalav in the animal, but not in the chal. And that chalav that we extract from a shchuta is really the same chalav that 5 minutes earlier, before the shechita, would have been chalav imo. But it's too late. The animal was slaughtered. It's now no longer chalav imo. It's not ruil lios eim.
Where else would the chalav be if not in the chal?
I'm not sure. It could be that it's in the I don't know what you call it, the belly. I'm sure there's another word for it. Right? It goes down from the belly into the chal. Have you ever seen a cow walk around and it's got this fat belly that's full of chalav? Right?
Wait a minute. The shape of the udder is the sac with the nipples hanging down. Is the chal the whole thing or just the nipples hanging down?
I don't know. I always thought it was the nipples, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's the whole thing. So in any event, let's just make this point, and hopefully as we go along, I mean, we're just, you know, scratching the surface. This is just what I call an introduction. Here's the distinction. In the case of chalav shchuta, that chalav is considered separate from the basar. And that gives it a real close relationship to chalav imo, as a separate independent entity of chalav, but not so in the case of chal. Chal is the basar, sorry, the chalav is muvla b'basar. Those are the two key words that we want to focus on. It's muvla b'basar. And therefore, it's further removed from being considered or classified as chalav. And l'chatchila, we want to cut the chal and remove the chalav, but that's already a chumrah. It's only a chumrah. It might even just be l'chatchila, as I said to you before. It could be that if he cooked it without cutting and removing the chalav, he's allowed to eat the chal, even on a drabbanah level. But drabbanah with machmet to require kriya. But it's not the same as chalav shchuta. Chalav shchuta is chalav drabbanah. So if you take chalav shchuta and you cook it with meat, then what you have is possible chalav drabbanah. And then we could ask all our questions, whether it's also banah, whether you apply chaticha nasas nevela, what do you do with basar b'chal v'drabbanah? But the case of chal is not even basar b'chal v'drabbanah. It's one step removed, further away from basar b'chal. Even on the drabbanah level, they don't want to consider it chalal. So that's number one. Now, I just want to mention on the side that there's also a halacha called chalav trefa. So you have a live animal, you didn't shecht it, but it's got an internal injury in such a way that it's going to die. And now the question is, would the chalav of a trefa, which again, you can milk the cow's still alive, it's walking on all fours, would that chalav be considered chalav ha'em? Mm-hmm. And Rabbi Kivega has a whole discussion because a trefa, the Gemara assumes, cannot be molded. And since the Torah says chalav imo ha'ra'uya lios em, Rabbi Kivega wants to know, in one side, maybe a trefa is just like a shchuta, even though it's alive, because it's ein ruya lios em, because a trefa cannot be molded. And then Rabbi Kiva has another tzad. He says maybe since it's ruya lehis aber, meaning that this cow, although it's a trefa, it can become pregnant. It can never carry to term, full term, and give birth to a calf, but it can become impregnated, maybe that's considered Re'uya Lios Eim. So the poskim say that really Rabbi Kivega was vacillating back and forth. What is Eim? Who is Eim? Is it the conception mother or is it the birth mother? Which has tremendous repercussions in terms of surrogacy. So if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Kivega finally concludes that the chalav of trefa would be considered chalav imo because the trefa can become pregnant. So that means that motherhood, emo, is dependent upon pregnancy, not on birth, because again, the trefa cannot be molded. So I have a friend who has a student, and she, a Jewish girl, she served as a surrogate mother. It was not her, you know, her ovum or
wasn't a raggy.
She wasn't married, so she didn't have a sperm from her husband. So basically what she received into her body was a zygote, you know, a conceived egg from someone else. And then she gave birth to the child. The question is whether the child needs gerus or not. Because if you assume that the host mother, or let's call it the birth mother, is the aim, then this child was born to a Jewish mother. It doesn't need gerus. But if you go back to the conception, you know, that little zygote that was conceived and then was injected into a body, then she's not the mother of the child. And let's assume that the, you know, the ovum came from a non-Jewish woman, then the child would need gerus. So who's the mother? I remember when we used to read books, you know, to our children, there was one book, it was a very cute book, it's called Are You My Mother? Do you remember this book?
I forgot the name. It's an animal or bird that goes around to different
animals. Exactly. Yeah. What happens is that the bird, the mother bird, is sitting over its little eggs, and then it flies away to get some food. When it comes back, the egg is not there. So the egg had fallen from the high nest down to the ground, and it hatched, and it's looking all over, are you my mother, until finally it finds its mother. It's a beautiful little book. I've got the name of the author. We used to read it to our kids. Are you my mother? So we don't know who is the mother here. Is the mother the birth mother, or is the mother the conception mother, the genetic mother? And it's got really tremendous repercussions. And really, Rabbi Kivayega might be vacillating about this point, because when you have a trefa, is she the aim simply because she can conceive? That's already Eliel's aim. Or do we say no? Since she can't be molded, she's not aim, and therefore the chalav of a trefa is mutter, because it's not chalav. It's not called aim, because aim means we were holy. Anyway, that's just a fascinating offshoot of our sugya. So again, we don't know what the words eino over olav mean, because it might mean that you can eat it, or it might mean that you're not allowed to eat it, but just you don't violate basa b'cholav, and that's going to be the sugya that we're going to learn today. Now, another situation of a part of the animal which is saturated with something that's prohibited, if you would cook it as is the lave. Because the lave has blood in it. So even though the subject of our Mishnah is not dam, it's really chalav and basa b'chol, but nevertheless the Mishnah goes off on a little bit of a tangent to discuss a parallel situation of the dam in the lave. And once again, the Mishnah says, Koro, you cut the lave, umotzi es dam. And he has to extract all the dam. And again, that's a major volume of dam that has to be removed. Lo koro, if he cooked it as is, so he took the lave and he cooked it full of dam, eino over olav. Now, we have to understand that in this case of Eino Overlov, it's for a totally different reason. In the first case of Chal, the reason why Eino Overlov is because it's not considered Chalav Ha'em, because the animal is already Shechted. In the Sefer, in the case of Lev, we're talking about an oaf. Now the lave of an oaf is very small. It's what's called Pachos Mikishir, Pachos Mikizayas. So that even if this lave would be absolutely, totally saturated with dam, you would still not end up with a kezias of dam. And therefore, if you went ahead and you cooked this lave without removing its dam, and you ate it, you would not be in violation of the Isur dam, because there's no kezias, there's no shear. Now this touches on a very fundamental sugya at the end of Yuma, which is called Chatzi Shir Osur Min HaTorah. So for example, if you take a half a zayis of chelev or half a zayis of dam and you eat it, then Rabbi Yochanan at least is of the opinion that you violate an Isur Doraisa. You're not going to get Malkus, but you will be in violation of a Doraisa, because Chatzi Shir Osur Min HaTorah. So I don't understand why the Mishnah says Eino Over Olav. If you're telling me that there's no Isur Dam because the oaf could not possibly have a kezias of dominant in the lev. I mean, to say the lev oath. Okay, fine. So he's not, you know, he's not going to be chayav malchus if he eats the lev that's saturated with dam, because it's only a chatzis zayis of dam. But why do you say ain't overlo if he violates an isin doraisa of chatzis shir osim and atoro? Now, in the footnote here, he points out the following. He says, "Belev shebishlo lo kriya." So he didn't take out the dam, and he cooks the lev as is. Yeshnam shnei nidonim. There are two issues. Aleph, ma din adam shenoser bo gam li acharat bishul. What's the status of the dam that's still saturated in the lev after the bishul? Is that considered dam? Beis, ma dino shel basar alev. What about the basar of the lev? Forget about the dam in the lev. You have to know whether the dam in the lev is dam and it's osur, or what about the basar itself? Ha'im nesar machmas adam shen nivla bo. As a result of the bishul, the basar of the lev now is bolea the tam of dam. V'das Rashi, shadam atzmo osur min haTorah. V'yesh ba'achilah sochiv kares.
V'lo what?
Yesh ba'achilato chiv kares. V'lo pocha mishna el lev shel of she'ein bo shir. V'lo chen eno chayev. But if there would have been a shir of dam, let's say it wasn't a lev of an oaf, it was a lev of behemoth, so it has a shir of dam, then eno chinami, that would be dam that's osu min haTorah, because it has a shear. Now, if that's the case, then the basar of the lev was bolea the tam of dam, and the dam is osur min haTorah. If it would have been, for example, you know, let's say a behemoth, lev of behemoth, in the case of an oaf, it's elo shear. And he says, "V'ilu inyan basar alev sover Rashi she'ein bo kol iser." This is a chidush. There's no iser in the basar. Now, why the basar alev was bolei the time of dam? And he answers, "V'nei shalev chelaku chalaku v'eino bolei sadam." There's something about the physical structure of the lev that it's not bolei the dam. Again, we'd have to take a quick course in biology here, but the nature of the muscle, you know, the heart muscle, is such that it doesn't absorb the dam even through bishul. Now, Tosis, in this long Tosis, Dibur Masal Alev, argues against Rashi, and he says the following: dam shel bishlo, if he took the lev and he cooked it as is with all its dam. Embo isa Torah. The dam itself is not awesome in a Torah. Not like Rashi, who says the dam is awesome in a Torah. V'lachein adam embo v'lachein adam atzmo embo isa Torah. Okay, so this is a footnote here about a sugya menachos. Just 1 second, I want to see where this footnote ends here so I can pick it up. So as Rashi says that the dam is dam, but the basar is not basar. Meaning the basar is not also, the dam is also. And Tos says just the opposite. The dam is not also, but the basar is also. But they should bolei me'adam. Even though again Tosis holds that there's no iser in the dam. But nevertheless, the Rabbanan asked it. And now the lev itself as basar was bolei the time of dam. The afal pichein gam tosis modim shemishnasenu osekis bolei of she'ein b'domo kares. The neshan mishnah v'daveres gam kisha ochlo chai lelo bishul who bolei behema shochlo chai bevade overlo v'chai of kares mishum shochlo kizayis dam she'ein mevushal. So again, according to Tosafot, once you cook the dam, then you've changed its very essential halachic status and it's no longer asur. Paradoxically, the basar, after bishul, will be asur because it's bolei of the time of dam. And that's only in Issa d'Rabbanan. Rashi has it just the other way around. According to Rashi, there is no Issa the basar, because basar has a certain quality of physics that it's not bolei of the dam, but the dam itself is asur. So there's a fundamental machlokas here in Hilchas Dam about dam shel bishul. All right, let's begin the Gemara, and this is on the top of Kuf Tes Amid Beis. Om Rav Zera Marav, Eino Ovalav Umuta. When the Mishnah says that if you cook the chal without kriya, you don't violate, which literally means you don't violate Issa Torah, comes along Rav and he says, V'af min Rabbanan Mutar. You can eat the chal. So this whole business about kriya is only a chumra lehatchila, that you should cut out you should cut it in such a way that the chalav in the chal will be removed. We'll call it drained.
Are Rabbi Zera and Rav speaking about both parts of the Mishnah, or only about the basar v'chalav?
Right, we're only talking about chal now.
Okay.
And he cooked the chal without kriya and its mutter. Go ahead and eat it. And why is this so? Because since on a Doraisa level, the chalav that you find in the chal of a shchuta is not considered chalav, because we said it's not chalav imo and re'uya lios imo. So as far as the Issur Basar b'chalav is concerned, this chalav is not considered chalav because it's from a shchuta. Therefore, even after you remove it from the chal, it's not asur, it's not chalav. And therefore, as long as the chalav is absorbed inside the chal, then the chachamim did not asur it. So again, if he removes the chalav from the chal, then midrabanan is asur. But if he never removed the chalav from the chal, then it's mutar. If he cooks it as is in its natural state without cutting it and removing its chalav, then it's mutar. L'chatchil l'chacham will say remove the chalav. But if he didn't do so, we're not going to penalize him, and he's allowed to eat this mixture of basar b'chalav. So it's interesting, you know, sometimes we ask, Chazal say that for everything that's asur, there's something parallel that's mutar. Do you remember that? I think it's also here in Chulin. It's an Agadah to the Chulin. So what would be a case of Basar B'chalav that's mutter? Yeah. This would be the case of Chal, according to Rav in the name, Rav Zera, the name of Rav, that you can have Basar B'chalav and it's mutter. Truth is, I don't really need this statement of Chal to answer my question, when would you have Basar B'chalav that's mutter? You could have Basar B'chalav that's mutter if you shech the cow and remove its chalav and then cook that chalav with basar. But that's only on a deraisa, the midrabbanan will be asur. Here's a case where even midrabbanan you're eating, you're allowed to eat basar b'chalav.
You know, if you start a restaurant that would serve this,
maybe it would be very popular. And we call it misadat chal, shibishla below kriya. I don't know how much, you know, you'd have to have a main title and a subtitle, you know, Misadat Chal, and then underneath it would say Shibishra, Anachnu Mevashlim Chal below Kriya. Okay. Well, Chatkili, you're not allowed to do so, but if they serve it to you, you're allowed to eat it. Okay. Now, what would be in a case where instead of cooking the chal without kriya, he would roast the chal without kriya? Would sleeve be any different than bishul? I have a footnote here in which they quote a Rashi later on, one blot later, which we didn't get to, that lohita rav el kasher. Just one second, lohita rav. Just one second. Oh, just the opposite. My mistake. I stay corrected. Lohita Rav Eladavka Kashat Solu Esakal Lokriya. So Tzli is what you call roasting.
Wait, that's Rav Center, according to that?
That's Rav Center. Aval Kishat Bishlu Lokriya is Vivade Nesar. So we have to change the subtitle of our restaurant. It's not Kishat Bishlo below Kriya, because Bishlo below Kriya would still be Asur. It's slow below Kriya. So you get yourself a big a barbecue, you know, a grill, and you grill chal without cutting out its milk. And you end up with grilled chal, and that grilled chal is saturated with cholam, and it's mutter. L'chatchila. Again, you should have done Kriya. I'm not denying it. He says that they shall bishul maflit es hacholav hakonus bekchal, that the cooking process causes the chal to spit forth its cholav.
But doesn't tzliya also? That's why you roast livers, right?
Okay, right. So we'll get to that in a second. But let me just finish.
Okay.
So again, if they shall bishul maflit es hacholav hakonus bekchal. So at the beginning of the bishul, the cholav exits from the kchal, and at the continuation of the bishul, the cholav goes back into the kchal. Ubishosh epiresh hacholav me'akchal. Once the cholav separates from the kchal in the first stage, right at the beginning of the bishul. Chalav dichal chalav shchuta. Remember, we said the chalav shchuta because the chalav is like a separate entity from the rest of the body of the animal. Then the rabbanan is called chalav. Although the rice, it's not really same, but the rabbanan asid. Here's a case where even in chal, where the chal is saturated with its own milk, and if it's not like chalav shchuta, which we found the chalav in some other part of the body, and now since the chalav is absorbed in a natural sense, right? That's how it is in nature. In this chal, the chal is saturated with chalav, the Rabbanan didn't ask for that chalav. But once he subjects the chal to bishul, now the chalav separates itself from the chal and it becomes chalav shchuta, which the Rabbanan is also. And now it goes back into the basur of the chal and it asks it. Oh, Masha'en came, it's Leo. Shacholav aniflat al yidei atzliya notev hachutza.
Ah, okay.
So I guess in the grill you have holes in the bottom of the tray that holds the basar. So the chal is being put on this tray, and now the cholav is notev hachutza through tzli. It goes down, right? Like you'll see it in liver, right? The eno chozev enivla mekchal, so that cholav is extracted, and if you would, you know, gather together that cholav would be awesome in rabbanon like cholav shchuta, but nevertheless in mitzis it never goes back into the chal in the case of tzli. So that's what we have over here. Now we have tosis di ramaskel eno here on daf kuftesam and beis, and they add another element that according to this Rashi. There are three different dinim. The first din is that if you cook chal without kriya, let's say, how much water is there in the pot? Right, you put the chal into a pot and you cooked it. So he says there's not enough in the mayim against the chal. There's no shishim in the mayim against the chal. In such a case, nesar hakol. Everything becomes awesome. Mid up on it again. Why? Because the cholav is poresh, and then it goes back and it's nivla. So therefore, everything is awesome. Now, in the second case, im hoyav amayim shishim keneged akchal, v'lo hoyav basar acher bakdera. So there's no meat in the kedera in which you cook the chal, and there's a large volume of mayim. In this case, hakol mutar. Why? Because the cholav is bottled in the mayim, and it's not cholav shchuta. because immediately when it comes out of the kal, it's batal. Now we have a third din. If there was other meat in the pot, is even though there is 60 in the water against the kal, nesar hakal, the kal becomes osur. Mifnei shetam basar nivla b'cholav shebekal v'osra. The tam of the basar now becomes saturated with cholav, the cholav of the kal. So let me read the last piece again. He says, im haya basar, basar acher v'osra kedera, afal b'sheyesh b'mayim shishim keneged hakal nesar hakal. Why? Mishum shetam habosar nivla b'cholov shebekal v'osro. Wait, why don't you say that with regard to the kal itself? Why do you need another piece of meat in the kedera? So again, if there's no other piece of meat in the kedera, and there's bittul, the shishim, and the mayim against the kal, so in such a case, it's mutter. Why? Because the kal shapirus is bittul in the mayim. But then again, that's going to be true even if he has another piece of meat. So why is it, if there's another piece of meat in the kedera and the shishim in the mayim keneged hakal is nesar? Why is that so? Once you have shishim in the mayim, then the cholov should be bata. If they shetam habasar nivle b'cholov shebekal. The osro, the tam of the basar, of that other piece of meat, is now penetrates into the cholov, and that cholov is cholov shapirish. But why isn't that cholov automatically bata? That's what I don't understand. He's saying that the tam of the other basar is now going to go into the cholov. But why? Why isn't that cholov batel in shishim, like in the previous case? All right, I don't know. This we'll have to believe to think about over Shabbos. So I'll take this up to me. Wish everyone a great Shabbos. You have a pencil like a bar? I'll just make a note of where we got to. Thank you so much.
Okay, I'm going to ask you guys to walk out.